Good morning. It's Jim Williams and Kib Robb for episode 4 of Coffee with Jim and Kim. And today's topic is going to be dogs. Dog bites. Now, Kimberly and I are both animal lovers. She has a lovely Labrador, and I've got Charlie, my German Shepherd.
Yes.
Big difference between the two dogs.
Yes.
In terms of the law.
Yes.
So tell us what's your understanding, Kimberly.
So we have a few issues here in Virginia. We're actually going to focus a little on our county. We're in Chesterfield County, Virginia. And we actually had a change in the law in January of this year with leash law. And leash law is an interesting thing because everyone thinks, oh, leash law means you have to have the dog tethered to an actual physical leash. And that is not the case here in Chesterfield County.
Correct.
So the understanding of the leash law here is a lot of times we'll get calls, oh, this dog was not on a leash, but it was on their property, not on a leash. So there's, again, another fact specific. But what the leash law in Chesterfield County states is that you have to have the dog either tethered to a leash or it is under the immediate control of the owner. And that's where it gets interesting.
And I think the regulation actually says obvious, doesn't it?
I believe so.
Is clearly obedient.
Yeah.
That's a word.
So Jim's dog is a yes. My dog is a no. my dog doesn't listen. She'll laugh. It's just blah, blah, blah. But immediate control means that your dog is at your side. I've seen people who do off leash and the dog is literally trotting by their side. No, that doesn't mean that they see a squirrel and they dart or they see a deer and they dart. Immediate control. If that dog is not under your command or control, then you are in violation of the leash law in Chesterfield County.
And in my experience, it's rare that someone has a dog under that kind of control.
Very.
Charlie minds me, but, you know, if she's tempted by some other dog, sometimes she'll run off. So I'd have to keep her on a physical restraint of some sort just to be safe.
Right.
Now, of course, there's an exception to this rule, right? And for public property.
Yes, no, public property, you have to have them tethered.
Even if your dog is obedient.
Correct. Now, in our neighborhood, it's the streets of Chesterfield County. So that's fine in the neighborhoods and the subdivisions. They can be off leash. But I believe if you are in a public area where there's not a specific dog park, or say, for example, I think, well, although, yeah, a mall. Perhaps the mall. I know some of the malls. I don't even know if that's Henrico or Chesterfield and Stony Point, but we have a lot of dog friendly places around here.
Right.
I do not. If I take Sadie to Lowe's, she's got to be on a leash.
Right.
She's not.
Now that's because the owner of the property, Lowe's,
right,
has a requirement that your dog be tethered.
Right. And even in the parking lot per se. I mean, you just don't want to. Have them at large. And so that's where it starts to become, and there is on property, off property, you're right because that's when it comes into somebody getting bitten and the dog, was the dog on the property or off the property, is always a big issue.
Sure.
And then of course it goes into other things. Just thinking off topic, I know we've had people who are delivery people and you're delivering on someone's property. Well, now it gets a little tricky. Fences, leashes, dogs again at large per se on a property, and somebody's approaching the property. So now it gets a little bit even more confusing to that. And that's when I think it starts to get into the breed as well.
Sure. So that's back to your earlier point about the analysis as to whether someone has a legitimate dog bite case.
Right.
Depends on so many variables. So which county you're in, whether it's a vicious breed or not. And so a vicious breed would be German Shepherds, Akitas, Eskimo, is it Eskimo dogs? What are they called? Not Eskimo dogs.
The Huskies.
Huskies, thank you. I call them Eskimo dogs. animals which are known to be vicious. So a Lhasa Apso is not known to be vicious. I guess I've seen some mean Chihuahuas, but
there's some mean Chihuahuas. The Chihuahuas guys, that live behind me scare me more than a Rottweiler.
Those are so noisy, right? So it just depends on the case. So
and
just,
it depends also on age. You know, a child, again, we go back to what we talked about with minors. A child who's a minor, again, there's no, you know, they're in a face of a dog is a little bit different than 14-year-old in the face of a dog or an 18-year-old in the face of a dog. So age, again, comes into this factor. So I love these podcasts because we're showing how there really isn't a black and white answer. There's a lot of gray area and a lot of overlap. There's also overlaps with tenants and landlords.
Right. That was brilliant on that case you were talking about earlier. Tell us about that.
We had a case where we have somebody a lot of times with tenants. So somebody gets bit and it says, oh, it's a tenant's dog and they don't have renter's insurance. Well, now what? Now we don't have insurance to cover, even though they should have renter's insurance. They don't have renter's insurance. And now we don't have anything to cover this dog bite case.
Right.
Now you start looking at the landlord and now you have to look at the lease. Now you have to know what does the landlord knew or should have known. So even in a private house, a lot of times leases in, I know even in my son, he's going to school, in his lease, there's a pet policy. And there are certain breeds that are not allowed in the apartment building. We have that here. We had a case where it was actually, I think it's Richmond City, where the apartment building is very clear on their website that you are not allowed to have a certain breeds of dogs in the building. And in this particular case, the dog that bit one of the tenants was one of those restricted breeds.
Yep.
So now you go back and you say, how does a landlord in a building with cameras not know? I know every dog on my block. How do you not know that this dog is coming in and out of the building? And so that's when it goes into knew or should have known. Sometimes you have absentee landlords in the case of somebody has a house, but they live in California. Well, you still should have a management company. You should be knowing what pets are in your tenant's house. And so that's sometimes where you might not be able to get the tenant, but you'll be able to get the landlord.
Right.
We had a case just recently where someone brought a dog to work and the employer, you know, oh, we didn't know. Well, you should know that your employees are potentially bringing pit bulls to work, not on a leash. So that was an interesting case. That was in Hanover County. So these are things where you can kind of, you might not get the dog owner, but depending on the circumstances, there might be somebody higher up, deeper pocket, who is liable in those. So we'll see how that case pans out. But when it's on your website of this is not, these dogs are not permitted. And then that dog is one of the dogs that bites. That's,
you got some liability there.
I believe so.
You know, maybe 5 minutes you can get away with it, but you know, a couple of days or a week.
Or multiple months of somebody. and there's a management office, I believe, on site. So it's very difficult to say, oh, we had no idea. So.
And we've been talking about dog bites. But we don't necessarily have to have a physical bite in order to have a case.
Correct. We've had some lunge cases. Again, going back to say, I don't recall if it was the actual, but a FedEx delivery person or UPS delivery person is walking up a driveway. There's no fence. There's nothing that says beware of dog. And the dog comes out from behind a car and growls or goes to lunge, and then somebody falls or tries to run and ends up injuring themselves. So that is another, and that's been it's been a good area of recovery.
Yes.
Because your dog is off leash. Yes, it's on your property, but it's a dangerous breed, or it should be, there's no immediate control, or are you letting it run at large? That's a little bit more of a difficult case, but not an impossible case.
Right. And I remember 35 years ago, it's been a long time, it was back when I was doing defense work, I had a case where a little girl was on a trampoline jumping up and down, and the family knew that this dog loved to get on the trampoline with their own kids to play. And so mom opens the door to let the dog out, and the dog immediately runs to the trampoline while this little girl is in mid-flip. And so she tries to stop herself and ends up breaking both of her forearms. Mm. So again, doesn't have to be a bite. You talked about lunge cases. That one is where you knew or should have known that your dog was going to interfere with someone trying to enjoy the trampoline. So it runs the gamut, that's for sure.
And be careful of contributory negligence. Again, that's what I'll bring up with adults or, you know, children not under 7. But if you are...
Kind of refresh us on that.
So children under 7 have no negligence. Anyone who's 7 to 14 is held to the reasonable standard of that particular age. Mm-hmm. And then over 14, you know, to 18, you're considered, you should know what right from wrong is. Over 18, you're considered an adult. But if you are tormenting a dog or throwing rocks at a dog. I mean, there is a contributory negligence issue. I mean, if a dog ends up in defending itself because you are whipping it or hitting it or hurting it, there's going to be an instruction, I'm sure, on contributory negligence by the other side. So
one of the paralegals here in office has a barely noticeable scar on her nose where she was a little girl and walked up to a pet not knowing any better and tried to pet it, and the dog bit her on the nose.
Yeah.
And so since she's less than 7 at the time, no contributory negligence. If you and I had done that, we got bitten in the nose, it'd be a huge contrib argument there.
Huge.
Absolutely.
I want to read something out of the Virginia practice book. And it says, if you believe from the preponderance of the evidence of defendants, the dog owner saw or in the exercise of reasonable care should have been aware that the fact that his or her type of animal was about to attack or injure the plaintiff, then they were under a duty to exercise reasonable care to prevent it from doing so. So again, that's a lunge case. You know, you're outside and you see your dog start to growl at somebody who's walking up, you know, delivering a package. You should really be able to rein that dog in.
Right. Now, of course, a lot of people have service animals anymore.
Yes.
And so how does service animals factor in this analysis? I can't say that I've ever had.
I haven't had a service animal case.
I mean, those dogs are highly trained.
And they do have the vests on all the time that says, do not pet, do not come near, because those animals are trained to really make sure that their owners are okay. And I mean, you said it even, I was telling you about my dog. My dog has a tendency to try to protect if she sees a male near me. And I think that that's something, so I know. So I always have her on a leash, even when I'm on my porch, usually, because I just don't know. Here's the whole thing. Dogs can't talk.
Right.
And I wish they did, but they don't. And I have two little girl neighbors that live next door to me. And they'll ask, you know, can I pet Sadie? And I always say to them, even though she's a sweet little lab, she's never bit, I always say, don't pet her face. Because I just feel I don't know. Any dog can have, to me, the propensity to not, maybe they're not in a good mood that day. Maybe they snap.
They're just like people.
I don't like people touching me. So I'm like, I don't want somebody in my face. So you never know if just you get it at the wrong time and the dog. So I always say, you know, do it nicely, pet her on her back. I just think that's being a responsible dog owner.
Yeah.
And I think everyone should do that. I don't think you should just be saying, oh yeah, go ahead, go to get right up in their face, go climb in their crate.
Exactly. Violate their personal space.
Yeah.
And even if it's a dog that someone has told me is friendly and won't bite, I always put my hand out like this instead of like that, because I've been told that an animal perceives that as an aggressive move.
Right, or going towards their head. Yeah.
Exactly. So now there's, a lot of exceptions. For example, hunting animals.
Right.
Not that there's a whole lot of hunting animals running around in downtown city of Richmond, but nevertheless, there's an exception for that as far as Chesterfield County Code is concerned. I don't know what the law is down in Richmond. Since they don't have any hunting animals, it probably doesn't make a difference there. But we also have search and rescue dogs. That's a different breed, and I would put that in the same category as a service animal because they're highly trained. They're not going to – you see the soldiers walk around with the canine dogs, and those dogs, they don't look happy, actually. They're so trained. The bomb dogs, et cetera. Because I know when I go to an airport and a canine officer walk around with a bomb dog, they get mad if you go up and try to pet their dog. So whole different ballgame.
I had an issue, you know, it says knowingly permit them to stray too, like running at large is any time an animal's off your property, it's considered running at large.
Correct.
And I was walking my dog once and there was a German Shepherd in the neighborhood that did get out, obviously just ran past the owners right into the street where I was. And I put myself in between myself and the dog. And I don't know if she was just trying to be playful or not, but I remember at first the owner's like, well, you walk past my house. Dog should not
public
be running
property
in the street. And that's the issue. Had I gotten bit or my dog gotten bit, you know, they'd be responsible for those vet bills. And I do have to do some more research. I know that there has been some new laws with dogs biting dogs and the owners being responsible for veterinary bills if a dog is attacked.
Right.
So I had a case when I was on the defense side. It was interesting. It was a dog park, which is
Right.
It's very interesting because now you have, I don't really particularly love dog parks, but you have dogs all running large, all different sizes or whatever. And this woman got bit because she put herself in, and the argument was on our side, at the defense was, you inserted yourself in between the two dogs to get them apart, and that's why you got bit. I do believe it ended up settling, didn't go to the jury, but
that's common sense. The two dogs are fighting.
They're fighting. And I mean, natural instinct is to try to break the dogs apart. Right. But in the interim, she got bit on the hand and it was a pretty big bite. Mm. So you have, you know, you've inserted yourself. You're going to get that contributory negligence, you know. And I get it. Most dog owners are going to want to be apart. But when it comes to black letter law, when it comes to contributory negligence, there can be some gray overlapping area there.
Exactly. Now, think about rabies vaccinations.
Mm.
So, let you know, say the average Henry, Etta, or Harry homeowner, they've got kids, they're running around to sporting events, PTA, sleepovers, whatever, and it's easy to forget to vaccinate your dog, even though a lot of these vets around here are pretty good about reminding you,
right,
like your doctor is, if you need a visit. What's the consequence of not having your vaccination for rabies up to date and someone gets bitten?
So that is a damage that goes on to our statement of damage. Rabies shots are a four-part shot. So if you cannot produce the papers, or say you were bit by a dog, yeah, and they cannot produce the papers, you have to get a rabies shot. That's going to be, and that is a four part, I believe they're spaced out by 4 to 6 weeks of a shot, and they're quite expensive.
I heard painful.
And painful.
I've never had it done, but I think you're right. The technology has changed. It seems to me back when I first started in 87 and there was a rabies case, it involved a lot of shots, and it was in the stomach and very painful. So it's good to hear it's down to just four.
Yeah, it's four. But there, and again, now you have to remember, and I have something where you're saying, okay, I have to go every 4 to 6 weeks for these shots for the next, you know, make sure I get all four done. Normally most homeowners will be able to produce a dog, you know, they get their rabies tag in it, especially you're supposed to have your dog registered. I know in Chesterfield County, you're supposed to have your dog registered and you are supposed to provide, I know I board my dog, so I have to provide, I'm always up to date. She probably gets more vaccines than she needs, but you have to be very up to date with all of that.
You
but
do.
That is a major damage in a dog bite case if you do not know the status of the dog that bit you.
And the other thing that's interesting is that if I were to call your doctor's office and say, has Kimberly had her measles vaccination, they'd like hang up on me.
Yeah.
But if I call your vet and I say, has Sadie had a rabies shot, they're not under the same restriction because HIPAA doesn't apply.
Right.
So they'll actually let you know.
Dogs don't have the privacy of
They do not, which is a good thing,
it
I
is
suppose,
a good thing. Right? It is a good thing.
Well, I think we've covered the dog area pretty well. Big difference between no leash, leash, on owner's property, not on owner's property, the type of dog. But let's conclude with wild animals, something fun. I always, when I think of wild animals, I think of Mike Tyson and his tattoos on his face and his pet, I guess it's a tiger, that he has on a leash.
Well, there was,
leash.
Years ago, there was a family that had, it was a big issue that they had a pig, like a big pot-belly pig.
Oh, Vietnamese pot-belly pigs. Yeah,
and, you know, everybody's like, save the pig, because everyone loved the pig, right? And but the Chesterfield, like, when you can't just have this wild animal in your backyard, but... Same where my son wanted chickens. I was a terrible mom for a long time because I couldn't have chickens under the HOA. But, you know, they're very interesting. I mean, I don't know anybody that's probably harboring a lion or a leopard or a tiger. But if you do have a wild animal.
Liability is a doggone near strict liability.
They are. But this is, I did find this very funny reading about wild animals, going back to the contributory negligence, that the plaintiff, the person who's bit, is charged with the knowledge of the vicious nature and propensities of a species of wild animal, even if it's tamed or partly tamed. You know, so you start to think of, what's the one in Vegas that got bit by his own tiger? So, Siegfried and Roy.
Yes, thank you.
So the plaintiff has to exercise ordinary care. So like if you're seeing a lion walk down the street, you probably don't want to, you know, say,
walk up to it.
Yes.
Nope.
Yes. Or, you know, a grizzly bear or anything like that. You still want to exercise common sense and caution. They're probably not ever going to be fully domesticated.
Never.
So something escapes from the zoo in Metro Richmond and you see, like I said, a tiger walking down Hull Street, you might not want to
stay out of the way.
Yeah, stay out of the way, because you are charged with knowing. It's going to be a hard sell to a jury that you did not know that a wild animal would attack you. So exactly. We probably couldn't help you in that respect.
Nope. I think that's a wrap for everything we wanted to discuss about the dogs and dog bite cases. Stay tuned next week for Coffee with Jim and Kim, and we'll have another topic for you. Thanks.
Thank you.